This is The Wealthy Bookheads, where we interview important books that can change your life. I'll ask the questions, and I'll let the book do the talking using words from its own pages. This is essentially a book interview. Your time is valuable, so let's get started. Today, I'll be interviewing Rich Dad, Poor Dad, What the Rich Teach Their Kids About Money That the Poor and Middle Class Do Not, by Robert Kiyosaki. It currently has over 100,000 reviews, has an overall rating of 4.7 on Amazon, and 84% of the reviewers call it a 5-star book. Question number one, what's the book about? Answer, Rich Dad, Poor Dad is the author's story of growing up with two dads, his real father and the father of his best friend, his rich dad, and the ways in which both men shaped his thoughts about money and investing. The book explodes the myth that you need to earn a high income to be rich and explains the difference between working for money and having your money work for you. Question. Can you explain what you mean by having two dads and how did it affect your thinking growing up? Answer. I had two fathers, a rich one and a poor one. One was highly educated and intelligent. He had a PhD and completed 4 years of undergraduate work in less than 2 years. He then went on to Stanford University, the University of Chicago, and Northwestern University to do his advanced studies, all on a full financial scholarship. The other father never finished the eighth grade. Both men were successful in their careers, working hard all their lives. Both earned substantial incomes, yet one struggled financially. The other would become one of the richest men in Hawaii. Both men were strong, charismatic, influential. Both men offered me advice, but they did not advise the same things. If I had only one dad, I would have accepted or rejected his advice. Having two dads offered me the choice of contrasting points of view, one of a rich man and one of a poor man. The problem was that the rich man was not yet rich, and the poor man was not yet poor. Both were just starting out in their careers. Both were struggling with money and families, and they had very, very different views about money. Question. You say your two dads had a different view on money. Can you give an example? Answer. My educated dad would say, the love of money is the root of all evil. My rich dad would say, the lack of money is the root of all evil. My educated dad had a habit of saying, I can't afford it. My soon-to-be rich dad would explain that by automatically saying the words, I can't afford it, your brain stops working. In fact, he forbade those words to be used. He insisted I ask, how can I afford it? By asking the question, how can I afford it? Your brain is put to work, he said. He believed that automatically saying, I can't afford it, was a sign of mental laziness. It's a statement, and it lets you off the hook. Whereas the question, how can I afford it, forces you to think. Question. On the topic of thinking about money, in the book, you say there's only one thing to know to be rich. What is that exactly? Answer. Rule number one is, you must know the difference between an asset and a liability and buy assets. If you want to be rich, this is all you need to know. It's rule number one. It's the only rule. This may sound absurdly simple, but most people have no idea how profound this rule is. Most people struggle financially because they do not know the difference between an asset and a liability. An asset is something that puts money in my pocket whether I work or not. A liability is something that takes money out of my pocket. Rich people acquire assets. The poor and middle class acquire liabilities that they think are assets. As an adult, I have difficulty explaining it to other adults. The simplicity of the idea escapes them because they have been educated differently. If you want to be rich, you simply spend your life buying assets or building assets. If you want to be poor or middle class, spend your life buying liabilities. That is really all you need to know. Question. By this definition of assets and liabilities, you claim that a home is actually a liability, not an asset. What is your argument for that statement? Answer. People still challenge me on the idea of a house not being an asset. I know that for many people it's their dream as well as their largest investment, and owning your own home is better than nothing. I simply offer an alternative way of looking at this popular dogma. If my wife and I were to buy a bigger, flashier house, we realize it wouldn't be an asset. It would be a liability, since it takes money out of our pocket. So here's the argument I put forth. If all of your money is tied up in your house, you may be forced to work harder because your money continues blowing out the expense column instead of adding to the asset column. This is the classic middle-class cash flow pattern. If a young couple would put more money into their asset column early on, their later years would be easier. Their assets would have grown and would be available to help cover expenses. I'm not saying don't buy a house. What I am saying is that you should understand the difference between an asset and a liability. Question. And the difference is that an asset creates cash flow, which is also, by the way, how you measure wealth. Why is cash flow the most accurate way to define wealth? Answer. Wealth is a person's ability to survive so many days going forward, or if I stopped working today, how long could I survive? Unlike net worth, which is often filled with a person's expensive junk and their opinions of what things are worth, this definition creates the possibility for developing a truly accurate measurement. I can now measure and know where I am in terms of my goal to become financially independent. Although net worth often includes non-cash producing assets, like stuff you bought that now sits in your garage, wealth measures how much money your money is making and therefore your financial survivability. For example, let's say I have cash flow from my assets of $1,000 a month. And let's say I have monthly expenses of $2,000. What is my wealth? Using this definition of wealth, assuming a 30-day month, I have enough cash flow for half a month. But when I achieve $2,000 a month in cash flow from these assets, I then will be wealthy. I now have income generated from assets each month that fully cover my monthly expenses. At this point, I'm no longer dependent on my wages. Question. In the book, To Achieve This Level of Wealth, your rich dad taught you to mind your own business. Does this mean we should start a company? Answer. I don't encourage anyone to start a company unless they really want to. Knowing what I know about running a company, I wouldn't wish that task on anyone. There are times when people can't find employment, and starting a company seems like the best option, but the odds are against success. 9 out of 10 companies fail in the first 5 years. Of those that survived the first 5 years, 9 out of 10 eventually fail as well. So only if you really have the desire to own your own company do I recommend it. Otherwise, keep your day job and mind your own business. When I say mind your own business, I mean to build and keep your asset column strong. Think of it this way. Once a dollar goes into your assets, it becomes your employee. Once a dollar goes into it, it never comes out. The best thing about money is that it works 24 hours a day and can work for generations. Keep your day job, be a great, hardworking employee, but keep building that asset column. Start minding your own business. Question. Let's get into the weeds a bit. When you talk about investing in assets that lead to cash flow and wealth, what exactly are these assets that you invest in? Answer. In my world, real assets fall into one of seven categories. One, businesses that don't require my presence. I own them, but they're managed by other people. Two, stocks. Three, bonds. Four, income-generating real estate. Five, notes or IOUs. Six, royalties from intellectual property such as music, scripts, books, and patents. And last, seven, anything else that has value, produces income or appreciates, and has a ready market. And that's it for assets that build wealth. As a young boy, my rich dad encouraged me to begin acquiring assets that I loved. If you don't love it, he said, you won't take care of it. I collect real estate simply because I love buildings and land. I love shopping for them, and I can look at them all day long. For people who hate real estate, they shouldn't do it. Keep your daytime job, but start buying real assets, not liabilities or personal effects that have no real value once you get them home. Keep your expenses low, reduce your liabilities, and then diligently build a base of solid assets. Question. You say in the book that minding your own business, ironically, made you a better employee. How exactly did that come about? Answer. For me, minding my own business and developing assets made me a better employee because I now had a purpose. I came in early and worked diligently, amassing as much money as possible so I could invest in real estate. Hawaii was just set to boom, and there were fortunes to be made. I sold copiers for Xerox at the time. The more I realized that we were in the beginning stages of a boom, the more Xerox copies I sold. The more I sold, the more money I made. Since I wanted out of the employee trap, I worked harder so I could invest more. By 1978, I was consistently one of the top five salespeople at the company. But in less than 3 years, I was making more in my real estate than I was making at Xerox. And the money I was making from these assets was money working for me, not me pounding on doors selling copiers. Question. In addition to real estate, in the book, you admit that you love investing in speculative or risky stocks. Can you explain this personal strategy? Answer. First, I love real estate because it's stable and slow moving. I keep the base solid. The cash flow is fairly steady and, if properly managed, has a good chance of increasing in value. The beauty of a solid base of real estate is that it allows me to take greater risks, as I do with speculative stocks. If I make great profits in the stock market, I pay my capital gains tax on the gain, and then I reinvest what's left in real estate, again, further securing my asset foundation. And let me say this on real estate. I've traveled all over the world and taught investing. In every city, I hear people say that you cannot buy cheap real estate in my area. That's not my experience. Even in New York or Tokyo, or just on the outskirts of the city, prime bargains are overlooked by most people. In Singapore, with their high real estate prices, there are still bargains to be found within a short driving distance. So whenever I hear someone say, "You can't do that here," pointing a finger at me, I remind them that maybe the real statement is, "You don't know how to do that yet here." Question. When it comes to real estate as an investment, a lot of people shy away from it because they just don't want to fix toilets. How do you respond to that? Answer. Real estate is a powerful investment tool for anyone seeking financial independence or freedom. It's a unique investment tool. So when someone says, "I don't want to fix toilets," I want to fire back, "What makes you think I want to?" Because I too don't want to fix toilets, I shop hard for a property manager who does fix toilets. Rich Dad would say, the "I don't wants" hold the key to your success. Let me repeat that. The "I don't wants" are the key to your success. The people who continue to say, "I don't want to fix toilets," often deny themselves the use of this very powerful investment vehicle. It's no different than the common argument against the stock market. I often hear people say, "I don't want to lose money." Well, what makes them think I or anyone else likes losing money? They don't make money because they choose to not lose money. Instead of analyzing, they close their minds to another powerful investment vehicle, the stock market. Whenever I hear people focusing on their "I don't wants" rather than on what they do want, I know there's a lot of noise in their head that must be loud. That's what my rich dad would say is the cynic talking. Someone who criticizes but does not analyze. Someone who lets their doubts and fears close their mind instead of open their eyes. Question. Speaking of emotions, you say that the primary difference between a rich person and a poor person is how they manage fear. Can you elaborate? Answer. I have never met anyone who really likes losing money. And in all my years, I've never met a rich person who has never lost money. But I have met a lot of poor people who have never lost a dime. Investing, that is. My rich dad understood phobias about money. Some people are terrified of snakes. Some people are terrified of losing money. Both are phobias, he said. He constantly told me that the greatest reason for lack of financial success was because most people played it too safe. People are so afraid of losing, he would say, that they lose. The reason that most people don't win financially is because the pain of losing is far greater than the joy of being rich. Question. What's the hardest part of becoming wealthy by investing in assets like you recommend in this book? Answer. I would say that one of the hardest things about wealth building is to be true to yourself and to be willing to not go along with a crowd. This is hard for most investors because buying what is not popular is frightening. Most people are poor because, when it comes to investing, the world is filled with Chicken Littles running around yelling, "The sky is falling, the sky is falling." It often takes great courage to not let rumors and talk of doom and gloom affect your doubts and fears. But a savvy investor knows that the seemingly worst of times are actually the best of times to make money. When everyone else is too afraid to act, they pull the trigger and they're rewarded later. Last question. In closing, do you have any final words of wisdom for readers who are interested in building wealth through cash-producing assets? Answer. If I could leave one single idea with you, it's the idea of the power of giving. Whenever you feel short or in need of something, give what you want first and it will come back in buckets. That is true for money, a smile, love, or friendships. I know it's often the last thing a person may want to do, but it has always worked for me. I trust that the principle of reciprocity is true, and I give what I want. I want money, so I give money, and it comes back in multiples. I want sales, so I help someone else sell something, and sales come to me. I want contracts, and I help someone else get contracts. Like magic, contracts come to me. In my own life, whenever I have felt needy or short of money or short of help, I simply went out and found in my heart what I wanted, and I decided to give it first. And when I gave it, it always came back. And finally, my favorite quotes from the book are as follows. If you want to be rich, simply spend your life buying or building assets. An asset is something that puts money in your pocket whether you work or not. A liability is something that takes money out of your pocket. Keep your day job. Be a great hard-working employee, but keep building that asset column. The main reason people don't win financially is because the pain of losing money is far greater than the joy of being rich. People don't make money because they choose to not lose money. Saying, "I can't afford it," is a sign of mental laziness. The question, "How can I afford it?" puts your brain to work. The "I don't wants" hold the key to your success. And that's it for this book interview with Rich Dad, Poor Dad, What the Rich Teach Their Kids About Money That the Poor and Middle Class Do Not, by Robert Kiyosaki. You've been listening to The Wealthy Bookheads, where we interview important books that can change our lives. You can order this book in the links below or on our website if you'd like to support our cause. It puts a few pennies in our pockets without taking any extra pennies from yours. As always, thank you for your time.